Okay, Mr. Wilkerson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is David Wilkerson. I'm here on behalf of the patent owners. All the issues in this appeal stem from a wrongly translated and improperly certified translation of a patent.
What difference does the translation make? You agree that the machine translation is acceptable.
Your Honor, we were asked at the hearing whether or not we were informed the court that there was another translation in the record that actually was submitted as part of a grandfather or grandparent application.
Are you not answering my question? What's the difference?
The difference is critical because we believe that both translations are incorrect. And the
machine translation?
That it's incorrect as well. And
I thought you'd agreed to use the machine translation.
We were asked if that would be an appropriate remedy. And we thought at the time that that machine translation, which was contained in the record because it was in the examiner's file, was a better translation than the one that was in the record, at the one that had been submitted.
Did you ever tell the board that you didn't accept the machine translation?
After the order, the order from the board, they ordered us to be able to file.
What's the answer to the question? Yes, no, maybe.
Yes.
Okay, where?
So after, in the motion that we were allowed to file.
Tell me where you said, told the board the machine translation wasn't acceptable.
The way that we did that, Your Honor, was we were at the same hearing.
Where?
Yeah, we were able to file a motion.
Okay, where in the appendix do we find such an objection?
Okay, I will find that, Your Honor. And if I could do that during the break, but explain a little bit about how this process happened. We were given permission at the same hearing after we said that the other translation was perhaps a better, an acceptable remedy because it was better than what we had. We had not thought about that issue prior to the hearing, and we were asked on the spot to look at that. We were given permission to file a motion for a late objection and a motion for additional discovery. And in that motion, we did not ask the court, consider this other translation as an acceptable remedy. What we said is, we want to be able to object to the translation that's here, and then we also wish to be able to depose the translator because we think there are critical problems in this translation.
It has nothing to do with the machine translation.
What's
the problem with the translation anyway? How does it help you?
So the original translation that was filed by the petitioner says 500 to 1,000 milligrams of an organic solvent for dissolving the urease inhibitor and or the nitrification inhibitor and the binder into a suspension. And so where we...
It doesn't talk about just dissolving the binder, which...
Right.
Okay. So what...
The machine translation... Go ahead.
Talks about dissolving the binder.
What it says is binder suspension is dissolved. That's what it says in the machine translation.
Okay, but so where did you tell the board what the correct translation would be?
So after we asked for that motion, the board denied our motion. We then said we have proof and we asked for a conference call with the board because at this point we have been told by the petitioner that Ms. Kayla Garcia did not translate the document. We were told that.
There's nothing to do with the machine translation. The board relied on the machine translation. I'm trying to get you to tell us where you told the board that they couldn't use the machine translation because that, too, was wrong.
When we asked for the conference call, we asked for permission to file supplemental information. And we, in that motion that we filed for, in that request, we asked to file supplemental information, two things. One was an addition, we had a new translation that we had received of Claim 1 at that point. Only after this issue came about, we went out and got a new translation of Claim 1. That new translation would have made it clear that only the binders are dissolved.
How do I know that?
It's
not in the record.
The court wouldn't allow us to file it. I mean, the panel would not allow us to file it. And they would not even give us a conference call so that we could create a record today. They denied us a conference call, and in their email denying the conference call, say we're denying you the ability to file supplemental information. We then filed a request for a rehearing on their decision because we wanted to let the court know that in the panel's decision, they said that they thought there was no reasonable expectation. We had not presented enough evidence to show that this translation was not properly certified. Well, before the petitioner filed their response, they had told us that, the person who certified the translation did not translate it. We thought that they were going to tell the board that, but they did not in their response. And so we asked for permission to share that new declaration and to be able to file our new translation of Claim 1. And the board denied that. They denied our request for rehearing. We never even got a conference call to be able to tell the board that. And Your Honor, in our request for a rehearing of their decision, we told the board that the translation, the machine translation in the record was not properly certified. The only certification that was actually contained with that translation certified the headings and the name of the inventor. It didn't translate any of the language in the patent. And so at the time when we were dealing with this field of endeavor, which we really talked a lot about in this case, because what happened was that the petitioner defined the field of endeavor as dissolving a urease inhibitor in a solvent system. At that time, we did not know the board was going to switch, allow them to switch the field of endeavor. We knew this case is about CN400, and we thought that the machine translation that said binder solution or binder suspension is dissolved was better than the translation from the petitioner, which was not. But there's no doubt today, as it sits in front of you, neither one of these translations that the board based its decisions on were certified. Everybody admits that one is a machine translation. It had no certification that the machine translation was correct, and that the other translation was not. And just to finish this story about the translation, how the story ends, if the court, we asked the court to take judicial notice of this because we couldn't get it in the record because they would not allow us to file it. Is that
just to be clear? Did you, before the board, agree or accede to the machine translation?
Your Honor, I think that in the hearing, my language was unfortunate.
That means you did agree.
Your Honor, I think that we said the words that I used was it would be an acceptable remedy for the board to use this.
Well, if you made that argument, how can you be making this argument today?
I think at the time, Your Honor, we, first of all, I had not examined at that time from the grandfather, grandparent, at the time of the hearing. This was something we were taking on at the time. We were asked this at the hearing and not fully examined the machine translation and the declaration that went with the machine translation at the time of the hearing, and answered that question to the best of my abilities I'm trying to do here today, and said that I think that that would be an acceptable remedy because we thought that suspension was, that dissolving the suspension made more sense, or binder suspension is dissolved. It was better than what we had. And quite frankly, Your Honor, we thought the court was going to rule against us, which they ended up doing, or the panel was, on our motion for additional discovery at that point.
I guess the following is perhaps a kind of segue into the merits, but what very, very concretely do you think is the difference made for the merits discussion by the difference between the machine translation and the one that you now favor?
Yeah. Your Honor, the critical point here is
the board ultimately said we don't rely on anything to which any of this would make a difference. So
right.
what very
right. And why that's wrong, in our opinion. We think that's error because CN400 actually teaches away from dissolving MBPT. Teaches away from that. CN400 is a patent that contains, that talks about binding of both urea and MBPT are solid at room temperature. And it talks about binding solid urea to solid MBPT, the urease inhibitor. And so if CN400 dissolved the MBPT, that patent would not work. It uses a fluidized bed procedure where the solvent is actually dissolved. But the way the patent works is it takes a binder material, which is acrylic resin or ethyl cellulose, and it dissolves it with a certain solvent. The preferred is industrial alcohol, but DMSO is listed as one. And then it is mixed together with MBPT to form a suspension, which, you know, we have lots of dictionary definitions of suspension is not a solution. And then that suspension is then combined with the urea, and the binder material binds that solid to a solid. So the point, our argument in this case is that there is no way that someone skilled in the art would look to a patent that talks about how to dissolve a binder, which is not related in any way to MBPT or urease inhibitors or nitrification inhibitors. That's related to acrylic resin and ethyl cellulose. Somebody would look to that patent when they're looking for an ideal solvent for DMSO. Because actually...
Is your argument only at this kind of threshold stage of whether a skilled artisan would even look to it? Or do you, assuming that that's wrong, that your argument is wrong, that, you know, of course this is in the same field or somebody would look to it, do you have a separate argument that the combination is not supported by ordinary obviousness analysis? Getting past the wood, you know, that this art is now on the wall.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. I mean, this would not be analogous art because it's not, these patents weren't even trying to solve
the same. I'm trying to get beyond the whole analogous art. Let's assume that this was analogous art. Do you have a separate argument that either under the right translation or otherwise, obviousness standards are not met?
I believe so, Your Honor. Nobody would be motivated to combine these patents because they're in totally different fields of endeavor. They're not pertinent to the same problem in any way. And
does your argument change if we were to rule that this is in the same field of endeavor?
No, our argument does not change, Your Honor. Okay. Even if it's even if it's in the same field of endeavor, Your Honor, nobody would be motivated to combine this because the DMSO does not dissolve the urease inhibitor in this patent. It does not do that. In fact, it teaches that doesn't happen. So that if you take DMSO and you dissolve the binder, you get a solution from those two. That combination. Then you add MBPT, you get a suspension, which tells us that it did not dissolve. So that means that patent actually teaches away from what the invention of the 108 patent, which is only involved with dissolving in solution. And I'm going to reserve the rest of my time if that's okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Caprahan, you can begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Substantial evidence here supports the Board's underlying factual findings, and the Board did not err in denying the appellant's motion for additional discovery. First, I would like to address the translation issue. As appellant concedes even today, the appellant indicated during the oral hearing that it would be an acceptable remedy for the Board to rely on the machine translation of the CN400 reference. And that is what the Board did. The Board relied on undisputed portions of the CN400 reference in finding the claims here obvious. That's to the first issue. As to the second issue...
Just on that, and I'm afraid I didn't follow the chronology as well as I might have... The request to do more that was denied by the Board, did that come after the oral argument or before?
The request to do more from the board came after the oral hearing.
So why does the fact that it seemed at the time of the oral hearing that this was an acceptable remedy effectively preclude the requests that were in substance walking that back that came after?
So in the additional request that was made by the patent owner here, the patent owner did not make the argument that the machine translation was incorrect. The patent owner argued that the machine translation was more reliable than the translation that the petitioner submitted, but that is all that was argued in the request for more. In addition, although the patent owner discovered that the petitioner's translator was not the one who translated that particular document, the patent owner was aware of that information prior to filing its motion, and it did not include that information in that motion. It only included the information after the board had denied that additional discovery. So these requests for additional requests were only made in its request for rehearing once the board had denied that additional discovery.
Okay.
So the second issue raised by the patent owner today is that the combination would have been inoperable. Now, the board here relied on the teachings of the prior art, and specifically the board relied on the Iannotta reference as the primary reference here. And the Iannotta reference undisputably discloses urea fertilizer compositions that include urea and solubilize NBPT. That is the primary reference that the board relies on. Now, the Iannotta reference also teaches that it was preferable to have fertilizer compositions that were non-toxic and ecologically friendly. Now, based on those teachings, the board found that the CM400's disclosure of DMSO as a possible organic solvent in these types of formulations would have given a person of ordinary skill motivation to use DMSO as another type of organic solvent in these urea fertilizer compositions.
Okay, can I ask? I have a question. The document exhibit 1015, that's at page 691 of the appendix, which is looks like a page from a website of Santa Cruz Biotech, which lists which is about the MBPT and lists solubility includes DMSO, but it has a date on it that is considerably after the priority time. On the other hand, page 17 of the appendix, the board says, quotes something, which I don't have, declaration testimony saying that publication was available to the public at least as early as January 2011, which would be prior. Was that very page with the entire set of solubility, of solvent listings available? I don't have this page, so I don't know what, can't check this myself. The board did rely on it. You make a passing reference to it in your brief, but as well. But if it's not prior art, it doesn't do very much, in which case we're back to CN400.
So, yes, I apologize, Your Honor. That declaration testimony is not in the record, although the board cites to it as indicating that this information was available to the public at least as early as January 19th. 2011, which is prior to the October 1st, 2012 priority date. But there are also additional evidence that the board relied on that indicates that there are only a finite number of solvents here that were used, commonly used in agricultural formulations. And a skilled artisan would have known that DMSO was substitutable for other types of solvents, such as those used in Iannotta. Iannotta discloses the use of methanol, for instance, as an organic solvent that can be used in these agricultural formulations And one of skill in the art at the time of the invention would have known that DMSO was a substitutable solvent that could have been also used in these types of agricultural formulations. So the board relied on not only Exhibit 1015, but a number of other additional underlying pieces of evidence in making its determination that here there was sufficient motivation, not just based on the design factors of improving the toxicological and ecological profile of these urea-based fertilizer formulations, but also because it was predictable and there were only a certain number of finite solutions in exchanging these types of solvents. And the board also found that here there would have been a reasonable expectation of success in making a urea-based formulation that included NBPT that was solubilized. So these findings were all they begin at APX 14, but continue throughout the board's decision, including on APX 27. If there are no additional questions, I yield the rest of my time.
Can you just address the point made about the boards having identified or defined a field of endeavor in the final written decision that's different from the one that is stated in the petition, seemingly even different from the one stated in the petition reply, if there is a one stated there. But I took the blue brief as making, among its arguments, a kind of lack of fair notice point.
Sure. So the board here, as a fact finder, takes the evidence and the arguments that are raised in the petition and the patent owner's reply and makes its own factual findings. And here what the board found in reviewing the entire disclosure of the 108 patent is that it was not limited to solely dissolved solutions of NBPT. In fact, the specification also disclosed formulations where the NBPT was in a suspension. And because of that, the board found that the field of endeavor was not as limited as just to what is recited in Claim 1. And in making that determination, the board cited to the inmate Metke decision, in which this court also found and rejected the appellant's argument that the field of endeavor was limited to the particular claims cited, when in fact the field of endeavor was broader within the written description included in the in that patent that was at issue in that case. So the board here was properly looking at the entire field of endeavor that is disclosed in the written description of the 108 patent. In addition, the board also found that here the CN400 reference meets the second test that's recited under the analogous task determination. And here it is reasonably pertinent to a particular problem with which the inventor was involved. And the 108 patent discloses that it was preferable to find or to formulate urea fertilization compositions that were ecologically friendly and non-toxic. And the CN400 reference also discloses that the preference for making ecologically friendly urea-based formulations.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Caprahan. Mr. Wilkerson, we've got a little over a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to address a few things that I don't think I completely did last time. And one question about the timeline about this. There was a point made there that we had knowledge that this person did not translate this document and didn't put it in our motion. That was one of the things I felt most egregious by the court's order, by the panel's order. I received an email at 4:55 p.m. When the day we were filing our motion, telling us that there was a new declaration where she would admit she didn't translate the document, but somebody else did. In the meantime, we were trying to file our motion.
Who cares about that? We're talking about the machine translation.
Well, okay, Your Honor. I mean, I was trying to address the point that was made by the intervener. In Appendix 4212 is where we told the court that the declaration was not proper on the machine translation. That came after the oral hearing in this matter where we had made this.
Where did you say that?
4212. It's our motion for rehearing. And we told
rehearing motion. Okay. But not before that.
That's right, Your Honor. That's after the hearing took place where I made this submission about the remedy. But after they rejected our motion to put additional discovery. We also sent an email to the court after this date asking for a conference call to be able to submit.
The rehearing petition was after the final decision.
The rehearing decision was before the final decision.
Before the final decision.
Yes. It was, Your Honor.
This is a rehearing of the denial of the request to submit it more.
Yes.
To submit more, I see.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's at 42 what?
4207, the pin site where we talk about the fact the machine translation is not properly certified is 4212. And then, Your Honor, in my remaining time, because as I extended here, I want to...
Well, wait. Where do you say that the machine translation wasn't accurate?
If you can see the paragraph, the second full paragraph on 4212, the translation contained in Exhibit 2006, that's when we filed the...
4212?
Filed by a third party, was accompanied by a declaration of Matthew Perrone. Upon closer inspection, the declaration only certifies the names of the inventors. And the,
we don't have 4212.
It's in the little volume, the second small volume. The second small volume.
I apologize.
Is Exhibit 2006 the machine translation?
Yes, it is. It's part of the grandparent application, Your Honor.
But this doesn't say, what you were just reading doesn't say that that translation is wrong. It's just saying there's a certification problem.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Well, that may be true. I think elsewhere in here we might say that we thought it was more correct, but not fully correct, Your Honor. We argue that.
Well, that's important. Where did you say that, if you did?
Looking here, Your Honor. What we said on the next page, 4213, Patent Owner's Counsel statement, the hearing the board could use it was not an admission that it was correct. And we said we believe it is more correct than petitioner's flawed translation, and it supports the validity of the patent, but it is still a machine translation and is confusing and imperfect.
Okay, but you didn't tell him what was wrong with it.
Well, I think at the hearing we did, Your Honor. I did. I was asked
which
this
hearing?
Point. At the final hearing that was
where?
Took place.
Where did you say that?
Yeah.
But if you're going to preserve a point, you have to tell the board that there's something wrong with the translation and that it affects the result.
I understand, Your Honor. I don't have the cite from the hearing document where, offhand, where I told the court that the distinction. I think that the board understood the distinction, though. They understood our point that CN400 does not dissolve and that the machine translation had a better statement of that. When it said the binder suspension is dissolved, that was much better than saying the organic solvent is used to dissolve both chemicals.
Okay. All right. I think we're out of time. Unless there are other questions, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank both counsel. The case is submitted. That concludes our session for this morning.